We'll hear argument next, number 88226, Benjamin R. Ward versus Rock against Races. Brenner?
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, the opinion of the Second Circuit of the Court of Appeals is flawed in two respects. It ignored the history leading up to the sound amplification guideline, along with the district court findings, most of which were based on uncontradicted evidence, and it applied the least restrictive alternative to suggest a hypothetical solution which had not been urged by either side up to the point of the Circuit Court of Appeals decision. The band shell, which is the subject of the sound amplification guideline, is located in the heart of Central Park. It's surrounded by two major roads, Central Park West and Fifth Avenue, and both areas is heavily residential. In addition to the southwest of the band shell, within 150 yards, is the sheep meadow, which was designated by the mayor as a quiet, a place for repose. Individuals who go there cannot use radios. They can only sit, read, etc.
How long ago was that?
1985.
Just 3 years ago.
Yes, that is correct. Between 1979 and 1986...
Since it's preceded the quiet area?
Yes, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm.
Between 1979 and 1986, Rock Against Racism conducted concerts in the band shell. During this period, there's a great deal of arguments between the city and the RAR concerning the loudness. The following occurred during this period. In 1983, the police attempted to lower the sound at the mixing board, and as a consequence, the sponsor got up and told the audience that the police were trying to lower the sound, and it caused a confrontation. There was some tension, and eventually the sound was lowered, and then it went back up. This was the pattern each year. There would be the interaction between the park officials and the promoter, resulting in this tension each time.
Mr. Kerner, may I ask you about the tension? Did the excess sound, having it too loud, violate any city ordinance or any city rule?
There was a general guideline for all parks that prohibited excessive sound. And indeed, summonses could be issued for that guideline, and summonses were issued in this case during some of the years, but the summonses were not paid.
And the violation of that guideline is subject to penalties?
That's correct.
And why didn't the city collect those penalties?
Basically, the record does not show why.
But why wouldn't that be an adequate means of preventing excessive sound in following years?
Because as I understand it, they just went unpaid. The city tried to enforce them, but this is a not-for-profit group that shows up once a year. As a practical matter, it just wasn't enforced.
Maybe you could deny them a permit. I suppose one of the remedies would be denial of a permit for violation of the law preceding years.
Yes, that could be an alternative, but frankly, we would just be in litigation each year in determining whether or not the nature of the violation.
Well, every enforce a law you get in litigation. I mean, that's one of the things you have to do to enforce the law, is you have to litigate.
Yes, we don't deny that there could have been other alternatives, but this one was tried without success.
Are you saying that the troubles with RAR was the reason for the adoption of the ordinance?
There were two other. It was one of the reasons. The bleeding out of sound into the sheep meadow areas and in the residence was one of the grounds. The two other reasons were that they wanted to unify the system of permits. The band shell is the most frequently used place in Central Park. And as a result, it was a very diffuse process where the applications had to be made to many different entities, and they wanted to centralize it in one person. The second thing is that many of the groups who come to the band shell are unfamiliar with outdoor concerts. As a consequence, they come with machines that are underpowered, and many people don't even have the machines and want to know what the source would be to rent such machines. So the second purpose was to assure every group that participated in the band shell that they would have the high-quality mechanics that would allow them to sponsor their broadcast.
Mr. Kerner,
is your position that the quality of the sound is the same whether or not the technician is the city technician or the rock technician?
Precisely, Your Honor. Indeed, if I can answer that in some depth, that goes to the heart of the issue. The testimony at trial was precisely that. The city hired sound consultant Gary Floyd was asked that both on direct and cross-examination. What he pointed out is that when you reflect the mix, you do it based on your technical knowledge and the knowledge that you obtain by talking to the performers, that this happens all the time, and that by doing sound checks in advance, sending out technical information to each of the performers, and in addition, by talking to them on the phone in advance of the concert, and allowing the performer, if he desires, to set someone down next to you to give you the technical advice, you can reflect exactly what the mix is supposed to be. Indeed, that's precisely what the district court found. And when Alan Thompson, who was the technician for RAR, testified, he pointed out precisely that's the method he used. Two things I'd like to elaborate on in response to your question. First, one year they didn't even use Alan Thompson, they rented out the equipment. So they used precisely the same type of program that we used. The person came on and he reflected the mix through the same process I just described. In addition, Alan Thompson rented his equipment, and so just as we rent our equipment. So it was very similar. And finally,
so
when
the sound technician is not as important as, say, a conductor of a symphony.
That is correct. The sound technician is merely a mechanic, and he can reflect, as the testimony shows, within 5 minutes, precisely what the performer wants. When Alan Thompson, RAR's technician, was asked how he achieves the mix, he said exactly what Gary Floyd said. He speaks to the performer. He does a sound check at the beginning of the concert, and finally he allows the performer to have a technician at his side in order to reflect the concert. So that's precisely right.
I might have had some trouble with that proposition if it just depended on my own knowledge, but the record seems to bear you out.
Not only has the testimony confirmed that, but the district court on two occasions reviewed that testimony. The first time it specifically noted that the technician defers to the sponsor as to the mix, and then RAR made a motion to clarify the order to determine who was to control the mixing board. In response to that motion, the district court judge issued a second opinion in which he said, as far as the regulation is concerned, the city is required, he read into the regulation, a requirement that they defer to the sponsor on the mix. And then he pointedly noted that there had been no evidence to indicate that the city could not reflect the mix properly, and in addition, there had been evidence to indicate that the city could reflect. And that was the overwhelming testimony.
Well, the city is going to reflect the mix a performer wants. Why does the city want control of the mix?
Because it's the only way to also control the sound to make sure that the bleeding doesn't occur to the...
So you say there's just no practical way of just controlling the sound?
Yes.
You have to do them both together?
Yes, because when the sound consultant was given the job of considering alternatives, they considered, one, just having the city technician, but having the sponsor's equipment. But then the mix would have suffered because a technician is only as good as familiarity with his equipment. If he's not familiar with the equipment, he can't do the job. So that was rejected. The other thing they thought about was negotiating a decibel level. But they had tried that in 1984, indeed at the suggestion of RAR, and RAR on the eve of the concert did not agree to it and said that no decibel level would be appropriate. Indeed, consistent with that, in the testimony by Alan Thompson, RAR's chief witness, when he was asked at what level it would be appropriate for the city to interfere with the concert, he said only when the audience's ears bleed, which gives you an idea of their reaction to any attempt on the part of the city to protect the unwilling listeners in the sheet meadow. It also...
I didn't really say only. I mean, I think he
was... Well, painfully loud, he said.
Yeah. Well, how does he... Excuse me. How does the city control the sound? It controls the mix and the sound.
And the volume levels are right on the mixing board.
Right, right. Well, why... let's assume there wasn't a city... the city hadn't put this... scheme in, and that the performers were allowed to use their own equipment and to control the mix. Why couldn't a city technician sit with the performer's technician and control the sound?
That is a possibility, Your Honor, but the problem is it causes the same interaction between the sponsor's technician and the city's technician that creates the same confrontational atmosphere that the city had in 1983 when it tried to use the police to lower the sound.
Well, here's the city with its own equipment sitting there with a technician controlling the mix and the sound, but they have next to them a technician from the performers who in effect control the mix.
Yes.
Why doesn't that create the confrontation?
No, that is a possibility, but by having the city technician alongside with the sponsor's technician, you have the same type of atmosphere that we were trying to avoid, which is this interaction which never worked. In addition, while each of these methods may be plausible, we believe that under the appropriate tests, which I'll discuss in a little while, that is not the test. The least restrictive alternative has never been a test of this court, and the question is whether the city's method has been effective, and I'd like to deal with that before we get to the law.
But just before we leave that point, there's no finding that it is not feasible from a technical standpoint for one person to control volume and the other mixing?
That's correct. Although what the record does show is that the technician, when he works both, he works them. It's done immediately, so these knobs are constantly being put up and down. But you're quite correct. There's nothing directly on point in that. I do want to point out that in 1986, 50 to 60 concerts were held under this sound amplification guideline. In terms of whether the city could protect the mix of the sponsor, every group was satisfied, some of whom used the New York Sound Group that was designated as sponsor for outdoor concerts. So not only do we have a history, and we have an expert that had been retained, but we have an in-fact use of this system. And every group reflected the mix, said that the mix had been reflected properly.
But may I inquire, supposing you had a less sophisticated problem that may be a little different area that you wanted to avoid excessive sound, and the drummer played much too loud, and they couldn't get him to quiet down, or the trumpet player played much too loud. Could the city say, well, we can't seem to get him to control it, so we're going to insist on having our own drummer in this band?
No.
Why not?
What's the difference? Because in that particular
case... He's good. He's every bit as good as your mixer and all the rest. So he's a talented artist.
And the drummer is bleeding in outside.
He just plays too loud for the surroundings. And they keep saying to him, hey, you're too loud. And he says, well, this is the way I play.
Then, yes, we could control the excessive sound.
By putting in your own drummer.
No, by controlling the sound.
No, you don't have any fancy. You just have old-fashioned musical instruments in a living room or a smaller area. And you have a regulation in this neighborhood. You can't have excessive sound more than X number of decibels. And you say it's too much trouble to enforce it by arresting people and putting them in jail. So you say, well, we'll insist on having our own drummer in this band or our own...
No, because I think there would be substituting your judgment for that as the aesthetic, the drummer himself. But we're not doing
that. Well, no, you say your drummer, he'll play it exactly the way... He'll play exactly the way your arranger thinks it ought to be played.
Right, but that comes
close... And he's good.
I agree, and that's a tougher case, and it comes closer to substituting your judgment for that as the musical.
No, impression. I'm not substituting. Just have a different performer.
But a different performer takes away from the, in effect, the quality of the performance. I can see.
No, I'm assuming it doesn't. I'm assuming it doesn't. They just say we'd like to have our own drummer.
But I guess
like we'd like to have our own mixer.
But I think the mixer is different in that.
Why?
Because. With respect to the drummer, you're replacing the instrument itself.
You've got to use city-owned drums, too.
Maybe in that case it would be unreasonable because the city would then be imposing its and substituting its choice for that of the actual instrument.
Which
I understand
exactly
that's a more egregious
here.
Situation, but I don't think that's what you have here.
You basically don't believe that the drummer could be the same, could be exactly
that's
the
exactly
same.
Right.
Whereas you do believe that the drummer could be the same.
We did exactly...
Just like replacing a ballet dancer. Use our ballet dancer, he'll be just as good. You don't believe he'll be just as good, do you?
That's right.
But you can believe that a mixer might
that's
be...
That's right, and if I may give an example, Justice Stevens. If this individual was using an auditorium that had a built-in loudspeaker system, I suppose one could argue that depending on the nature of the loudspeaker system, it's affecting the quality of his performance. But at some point, you have to draw the line. And with the mix and the loudspeaker system, the evidence showed that we can precisely reflect what the performer wants, whereas your example is a little more extreme. And indeed, that's exactly what the district court found.
Is there any such thing as quiet rock music?
No. But the issue is not whether the rock...
You're dealing with loudness.
Yes. But the issue...
And how loud is loud?
That's correct.
Well, that's a hard thing to do.
But this court held in Kovacs versus Cooper that you could establish standards for excessive sound and...
Kovacs was the difference between a loudspeaker and an ordinary voice.
Yes.
But this is not involved in it.
No, and we don't pretend to regulate the speech within the band shell area. All we do is control loudness to the extent it doesn't bleed into the unwilling listener area. And indeed, as I keep pointing out, I don't mean to belabor it, but I believe it's significant that of all the other groups, and there was folk, reggae, other rock concerts, every person was satisfied with the way the city-designated technician made the mix. And interestingly enough, during the same year that RAR received a dispensation from using this system because it obtained injunctive relief, the Department of Environmental Protection for the city reviewed the sound levels at the concert. RAR was by far the highest, and they generated complaints, whereas all the other groups used this mix to their satisfaction.
Let me go back to Kovacs for a second. There they can fix the level of sound that the soundtrack can distribute in the neighborhood.
Yes.
Could the city have said, we want our own driver on the truck?
Excuse me.
We want our own driver on the truck. He's just as good as your driver, and we're sure that he'll keep the sound level down.
And he would have controlled the sound?
Sure, he'd control it. He'd
so that it wouldn't bleed into other areas?
That's right.
And he wouldn't substitute his judgment for that of what
that's
went
exactly
through?
Right.
Yes, I believe that's a method that may have been appropriate under your court's test. This court has dealt with the appropriate standard with reviewing time, place, and manner. Time, place, and manner presumes that there's going to be some limitation on free speech, but it recognizes that where there's a significant governmental interest, that the government has a right to make this limitation.
Well, the government interest is controlling sound here.
To the unwanted areas, that's correct.
But you not only control the sound, but you control the mix. And controlling the mix as such doesn't serve your interest in controlling the sound. It's just that you say you just can't separate them.
It's the most appropriate way to control the sound. That's correct. And since mechanically the mix is not changed, and we have control over the sound, yes. And if you look at Heffron and Albertini and the Clark case, in each case, alternative suggestions were made which were less extreme than the one the government had chosen in terms of regulating the constitutional right.
But here, your regulation is such that controlling the mix doesn't necessarily serve the government interest of controlling the sound.
That's what I would respond. It does, because we believe it's the only effective way of controlling the sound. Because to have two people side by side creates the same confrontational problem that we had before when the police tried to control the sound, as did the other park rangers between 83 and 86.
Well, if you're going to let the performer's technician sit with the city's technician, I don't know why that isn't the same confrontation.
Because as a practical matter, whenever you have a group that doesn't recognize sound limits, and you have a large audience there, and you have the city there, some things happen in the heat of battle that don't follow a normal, orderly plan. Indeed, the Second Circuit recognized that when they themselves had trouble with their own suggestions because they recognized it dealt with, it depended upon negotiation and agreement, ability to get along, so they said as a last resort, pull the plug. Well, pulling the plug penalizes the listeners who have come to the concert. It's the most confrontational, yet the circuit thought it was the least restrictive. And indeed, the district court, in discussing that aspect, found it to be the most restrictive because it stops the concert. It is not our position that there aren't alternatives, but each alternative is fraught with difficulty. Any attempt to negotiate, which we had tried between 1983 and 1987, failed. And
Mr. Kerner, can I come back to the mix again? I guess I don't understand this. I had thought that you can't control the sound level without controlling the mix. That if you just establish a single sound level, some instruments carry further than others, and therefore you just can't set it at a certain level and let the person mix the various instruments any way he wants. If you mix it a certain way, it's going to carry further than if you mix it another way, and the decibels and the instruments' relative strength are interdependent. Is that right, or am I wrong about that?
The record is a little unclear. What the record shows, though, is that the mixer operates all of these in tandem. And indeed, Joseph Killian pointed out, to support your conclusion, that many times concert promoters who are unfamiliar with outdoor concerts will use loudness to overcome the mixing problem, so that they will make it loud as if that was a solution to properly reflecting the instruments. Basically, what the testimony is that it's all on one board, and one person moves all the handles in a synchronized fashion. So whether it is possible to have two people sit side by side is unclear from the record. What is not possible is to have a volume control separate and discrete from the mixing board. That presents more problems than it resolves.
But you say that the city will let the performance technician sit with the city technician.
Yes, that is correct. And indeed, that's what Alan...
And dictate the mix.
Absolutely, and the district court so found, and the circuit court upheld that particular portion. Basically, this was a solution after much consideration by the special projects director and the sound consultant expert. And the reason for that is all the other methods that were selected, with the exception of pulling the plug, depended on the cooperation of each group. And frankly, with respect to this particular group, the cooperation had been less than the optimum during the preceding history. So what the city wanted to do, and they had two goals, was to have a program that would reflect the sponsors' views and at the same time assure uniform high quality. And
how does the city technician know when it's too loud?
What happens is Mr. Killian, who's a special events director, he attends every concert. And he will go around the periphery of the band shell and see whether or not the sound is bleeding into those areas. He then will take the sponsor back there and tell the sponsor that it's too loud, and they then will concur. During 1986, there wasn't one problem for 50 to 60 events. The only problem was the one with RAR, where they had a dispensation because they had injunctive relief that allowed them to use their own concert mix. With respect to the applicable case law, Heffron, Albertini, and Clark, the test, as we see, to extrapolate from those cases is not whether or not the particular solution is the best, but whether or not it is effective, or does it serve the governmental interest in a substantial way. In this case, the record shows that what we did was effective. Every group was satisfied that used it. It shows that we controlled sound. There were no more complaints from the residential areas or the sheet metal. And we preserved the interests of the unwilling listeners, and we also preserved the sponsor's artistic integrity. That is precisely what time, place, and manner is supposed to do. And for all those reasons, we ask that the sound amplification guideline be upheld. I have not used all my time. If I may, Mr. Chief Justice, reserve some of it for reply if necessary.
Very well, Mr. Kerner. Mr. Kunstler?
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. I want to start with agreeing, in some respects, with Justice Kennedy with reference to whether a conductor of a symphony orchestra is like the man who does the mix. And I think they're very comparable. The man that does the mix, as all the testimony indicates, I think on direct, Mr. Thompson said he's part of the band. There is no leader, of course. He's part of the band. And then the city's expert, Gary Floyd, stated that you have left the decisions and aesthetic choices up to that individual, the technician at the console. And I was thinking, we put in our brief several analogies, which I don't think are particularly apt, such as mixing paints and so on. But I think there's a better analogy which would fit in with Justice Kennedy's question. The analogy would be if they had symphony orchestras, as they do, play in Central Park, and Zubin Mehta in the New York Philharmonic always played loud. And therefore, the city said, in order to control the noise, we're going to put George Solti in there because he's approved by everybody. Everybody likes him.
But there's no evidence in the record to bear you out. The trial court said that you suggested this for the first time only upon information and belief after the trial, and that the evidence to the effect of trial was to the contrary.
No, I think it was the other way around, because I think that on direct, Alan Thompson said that the mixer is part of the band.
He That's not the finding of the district court, Mr. Kunstler.
Well, I think that the testimony then is belied by the finding, or the finding belied by the testimony, because the Court of Appeals found that it was uncontroverted in the record that the mixer is part of the band. He's the aesthetic leader of the band. And I think if you look on page 370 of Fed Second, you'll find that the unanimous court said it is uncontroverted in the record. These claims are not controverted in the record, that the mixer is part of the band. He is the aesthetic leader. And you have the city's own own expert, Mr. Floyd, and I quote him here, "You have left the decisions and aesthetic choices up to that individual, the technician at the console." It's on Joint Appendix 180. So we have a situation where everyone agreed that the mixer is not just a mere technician who turns some knobs automatically. He is the leader of the band. He's part of the band. And to say that you're going to put the city leader of the band in there, I think is very much like saying you're going to put George Solti in because he plays Andante and Dolce as against Zubin Mehta, who plays loud, because you're doing the aesthetic mixing with reference to a city employee whom you must use.
I should have thought that is true, but the record doesn't bear it out.
Well, I quoted to you what was said both by Alan Thompson and by Gary Floyd and what the Court of Appeals said about that. I think the record does bear it out. Now, with reference to the alternatives here, I was somewhat astonished to hear to say that you don't use alternatives in cases like this. And I think Justice Stevens mentioned some. There are five alternatives that our friends, the National Park Service, and I thought their brief was more for us than for the appellant in this case, the petitioner. The National Park Service says in its regulation, this is Solicitor General's brief, page 21, in implementing its regulation, the Park Service relies on a number of alternatives. Ironically, they add, this doesn't include what the New York City Department of Parks does. And there are five alternatives here that are possible, short of putting in your own mixer. One is a limiter. It was testified to during the trial. There's an automatic limiter you can put on the sound, like a governor on an engine. Second, a separate sound control is perfectly feasible, separate and off the console, and the record indicates that. Thirdly, ordinances, which they say they don't enforce, but there are ordinances. New York City has an anti-noise ordinance, and there are nuisance ordinances, breach of the peace ordinances, and so on. Fourthly, they can pull the plug. That's one that the National Park Service uses. And fifthly, they can negotiate.
Is that feasible when you have a crowd? I've heard riots occurring when that happens.
But
you have a lot of people who are there for a rock concert, and the police come in and pull the plug. That's
Justice Scalia, they did it twice here. You'll find it on JA 140 to 141. Pulled twice, there was no problem at all. These are not large attended. They may have 3,000. They may have 1,000.
Well, yours might not be. Some of the other events there may be. I don't think that's
well,
a very happy solution,
twice,
do you?
And it caused no problem well, whatsoever.
Fine. Sometimes you're lucky. Sometimes you're not.
But that's
it certainly depends
resort,
upon
anyway.
The crowd, doesn't it?
That's the last resort. Even the
well,
park
I don't
service.
Think that's a very feasible one, frankly. I can, in fact, I consider that more extreme than what was done.
Well, that's the last resort, but there are so many before you even reach that point. What about a limiter? That was testified to. What about a separate sound control, I think that Justice White was talking about? What about enforcing those ordinances?
Do you concede the constitutionality of a separate sound control?
Yes, I do, because I think they have a right to regulate sound. Now, I have a problem with that, because I know how much sound is part of the sound of a rock band. And I have a certain problem with it, but for the sake of this argument, they have a right, I think, to control sound. And I would agree with that. We're not raising the question that they don't have a right to control sound. We agree they do. And I'm not sure a constitutional issue is involved there in a public park.
And you agree the record's ambiguous as to whether sound affects mix?
Yes, I think I would agree with that. If I had tried this case, I think I would have worked in more about the question of sound and mix. And by the way, the only three complaints here, Justice Kennedy, were three letters in the record. I think they're exhibits H1 to 3, one by Isaac Asimov, three letters that were put in over objection as hearsay from people who said they heard the sound at Central Park West.
Does RAR is not a performing group itself, is it?
No, it's a promoter. It's Rock Against Racism. They have usually six
so,
bands.
So you actually want to use your mixer for other bands?
For the bands that come to the RAR concerts.
But aren't you doing the same thing the city's doing?
Well, no, but they choose him. It's the same thing that the New York Philharmonic does when it chooses who's been made up. They choose him. The bands want to work with him.
100% of the bands chose your promoter or your technician rather than...
Oh, I don't know if there was a vote on it, but every year we get much the same bands. Alan Thomas...
No, but it's important if you're saying each group has to have its own technician, that it's like Zubin Mehta, and now you're saying that RIR does it for all the groups that appear.
Yes.
It seems to be quite inconsistent.
They do it for all with the consent of the groups. He works with the groups before they get there. He works with them when they're there. They know him from past experience, and they like what he does.
Was there testimony that any of the specific groups objected to the city's technician?
No, they never had it. Not these groups. They never had it because it was a dispensation for them. They got the injunction, and then they got the ruling of the Court of Appeals. So there was nothing in the record like that. I might add that the one way that I think is most feasible is negotiating the decibel level. And there's a misstatement in the reply brief of the petitioner. On page 8, they say the evidence also showed that RAR repeatedly violated agreed-upon sound levels in the face of repeated requests by police to reduce the sound. That is untrue. And if you look at the joint appendix references there, you will find nothing in there about agreed-upon sound levels at all. They never proposed that. In fact, as the Court of Appeals found, and I'm quoting from page 371, the city rejected the alternative of negotiating a decibel level for each event with the sponsor. They rejected what would be the least intrusive and least restrictive way, which would be negotiating a decibel level, which is exactly what the National Park Service does. That's one of their recommended alternatives, and Justice Scalia, I think that is the most feasible way. You don't intrude. You don't force them to use a conductor they don't want or a sound mixer they don't want. And you negotiate a decibel level. It was never done in this case.
What do you do when they violate the decibel level?
Well,
pull the plug?
Guess what the Park Service says it does. Number one, the Park Service says, and they spell it out very clearly, that when the volume gets over the level, they send over a representative or a ranger, park ranger, who says you're over it. Stop it. And if they don't stop it, then you have the alternatives of criminal action. You have the alternatives of pulling the plug, which I would say agree with you, should be the last in any concert. And by the way, Rock Against
Racism... I thought that had been done with your group, although there wasn't a specified decibel level, I thought there was indication in the record that the police had told the group you were playing too loud, and they said, okay, we'll lower it, and then it went up again. And then the police came back up and down.
That evidence is in the record, but there was no negotiated decibel level.
What difference does it make? Whether they tell you you're too loud, and you say, okay, I'll lower it, and then you get too loud again, or whether they say you're too loud because you're 3 points over this decibel level.
Justice Scalia, a policeman cannot judge decibel level without an instrument. There was never an instrument used here at all. There is a way to measure decibel level. The Park Service uses it. The police department is not equipped to do that, and they didn't do it.
Well, are you contesting the accuracy of the evidence that they got louder again when the police left?
Not at all, but how do you know what the decibel level
was? Well, I don't know how much louder they got, but I know they got louder than they had agreed to reduce it.
No, there was no agreement as to decibel level. That's what I'm trying to say. No agreement whatsoever. The city refused to negotiate that. And that's why the Court of Appeals said that they rejected that alternative. If there had been, you're just saying to me, a policeman said it was too loud.
Well, I don't know. Mr. Kunstler, you know, when I was a young man, occasionally I'd been at parties that got a little loud. And an officer would come by.
Is this a confession?
An officer would come by. He would not have a decibel meter. He'd say the party is too loud. And I have heard that on some occasions, not at parties I was at, it would get loud again. And the officer would come back without a decibel meter. I mean, this is just unrealistic.
But, Justice Scalia, I think what you're saying is unrealistic. What happens in a dorm or in a residential house when a party gets too loud and the policeman says it's too loud is different as to whether rock music or music is bleeding into another area. And they have tests to show, I think, it's not in the record, but I'll tell you what I found, that 110 decibels is the proper decibel limit not to go into the sheep meadow. And I think when you've got a thing like this, you can't use the analogy of a private party.
No matter what instruments you're using, I mean, if you're using, you know, a bank of flutes, all at 110 decibels, it's the same as if you're using
clarinets. No, but 110 is the
clarinets.
maximum decibel strength. That will bleed it into another area.
And
flutes won't do that. I agree with you. Flutes will not reach that decibel level.
Mr. Kunstler, as I understand the Court of Appeals opinion here, they said that the city had to use the least intrusive means of regulating the volume. In your opinion, is that the correct test under our cases?
I think it is. I think admitting they have a right to control noise, which I admit, I think that the least intrusive way into First Amendment expression must be used.
And what is the leading case from our court, do you think, that supports that proposition?
Well, I think that essentially one of the tests which I think was used in O'Brien, although I don't think O'Brien, that four-pronged test, applies here when they use the term least intrusive means. I think in many of your cases, though, none are like this case. This is a sui generis case.
But what is the principal case you would rely on here to us for the proposition that the city must use the least intrusive means?
I think, essentially, I would start with O'Brien and go through some of the other cases that you've talked about, Boos v. Barry, maybe.
What would you do about
Frisbee against Schultz?
What would you do about Clark and Albertini?
I don't think they apply.
Well, they said
sleeping in a park has nothing to do with sound.
I know, but this is a time, place, and manner question, isn't it?
I'm not even sure this is a time, place.
Well, so assume it is. Assume it's a time, place, and manner restriction. Then Albertini and Clark say that least restrictive alternative hasn't any place in this kind of a no.
I know, but I don't think this is a time, place, and manner at all. I think this is a curb on free expression. This is an attempt to regulate free expression. Music is within the First Amendment. I think it's an attempt to regulate it. I don't think it's a question of saying time, place, and manner, like sleeping in Lafayette Park, for example, or Albertini, whether you can get on after being kicked off a military reservation.
Well, it's saying what you have to do if you want to make noise in a park.
Well, parks are a place where you're supposed to have all sorts of controversy, I think, which is different than Hickam Air Force Base in Hawaii. And it's different than Lafayette Park. I don't agree with Clark.
I wouldn't think you would.
Community control, you know, I'm sensitive it was your opinion, and I'm going into the storm by saying...
Well, it was a court's opinion.
I understand, but you authored it. And what I'm saying is this, Justice White, I don't think it's a comparable situation. You're really not talking so much, although I agree thoroughly with Justice Marshall's definition and analysis of sleep in conjunction with the plight of the homeless in Lafayette Park. But here you're dealing with something else. You're dealing with an expression, an oral expression protected by the First Amendment. And I think you can make an argument, as you did, that sleep is not such an oral expression. But I think here you're dealing with an oral expression. I don't really think this is a time, place, and manner case at all. I think this is a case, can you control artistic expression by using a state employee? And I think in that case, though I recognize noise can be controlled, I think there you must use the least intrusive way.
Mr. Kessler, let me interrupt. You agreed earlier that noise control is permissible or something. Did you mean to say that you can control noise by using a state employee? Supposing you just had a sound amplification system and maybe making speeches and all the rest. You don't want it to get too loud because it disturbs the neighbors. Do you concede that the state could insist on having its own employee at the microphone?
No, I answered Justice Kennedy's question. Arguendo. I don't think that noise should be controlled by the state, that constitutionally. I said, though, I would agree that noise can be controlled in some fashion, ordinances or what have you.
Oh, well,
I will not agree to
the
constitutionality.
You don't agree that the...
I don't want to give that miss...
Well, I thought you had. I thought you'd
agree. I thought
agree.
I had, too. That's why I'm making this second statement.
Oh, okay. So you would make basically the same argument if this was just as you didn't have the mix to make it a more of an artistic thing, but you just say that part of the artistic presentation is the sound volume, and we do not agree that you can have a state employee sitting with his thumb on the button.
And Justice Stevens, sound is an integral part of the artistic expression of rock groups. There's no question about it. And so I didn't want to give the impression, I guess I did, that I agree that constitutionally you can just control noise. All I am saying, essentially, that you can create situations where you have ordinances against, I think in the Kovacs case, said loud and raucous noise and sound trucks. And I think this court has held a number of times that that can be controlled, not by a man at the console, but by ordinances and criminal action.
Well, you mentioned that one of the possible alternatives was the automatic governor.
Yes.
That would just be attached to the machine, and here would be a... A state instrument.
No, not by run by the state.
Well, I know it wouldn't be run. It'd be automatic.
It's automatic.
And so when it gets too loud, it just turns it down.
That's right.
Well, would that be constitutional?
Well, it's not unconstitutional because no state official runs it. This is something the band would do voluntarily.
I know, but it's something that the state insists on. It insists that the people putting on the concert have this automatic noise regulator.
No, that
machine.
Wasn't my point, that they would insist upon it. They would set the decibel limit, and then the band, in order to control itself and keep from coming under the criminal statutes, could use the limiter or the governor on the band. I wasn't suggesting the state could do it at all. And I'm not even suggesting, Justice White, that it's the best thing for artistic music. I think the best thing is to negotiate decibel lengths, limits, the way the Parks Department does, National Park Service, and then enforce the law. They've never enforced the law here. They've never even negotiated the limits, even though they say in their brief that they do. You won't find it in the record.
But Mr. Kessler, I don't understand what the source of their obligation to negotiate is. If they picked your 110 decibel level and said, that's what we think is reasonable, and you comply with it or you don't get a permit, what would be wrong with that?
I don't think anything wrong with it.
So, I mean, there really is no constitutional obligation to negotiate with you. They can make the rule that they think would...
They can make the rule.
...the citizens' interest in
the normal thing, National Park Service has made the rule that we will establish a decibel level, and they say they have 1,500 events a year where sound amplification is used. We will reach a decibel level with you, and you stay under it, within it.
Is
I think
any
that's
testimony?
The least intrusive.
Excuse me, is there any testimony in this record that a decibel level is technically feasible for controlling rock music?
No, I don't remember any testimony about decibel level being feasible for rock music or unfeasible or non-feasible for rock music. But I noticed in the Park Service regulations and in the Solicitor General's brief that they have rock concerts at national parks, many of them, and that they establish a decibel level. They monitor it through an expert or a ranger or what have you, and they have all those alternatives. They use the word ironically about what's been happening here, and I think it is ironic that they're attempting really to become part of the band, to have a state official as part of the band.
Mr. Kinsley, they say they monitor the decibel level. Do we know where they monitor it? Is it on the Sheep Meadow or where the music originates?
We don't know. I don't think there was any testimony that I recall.
Well, I keep coming
monitoring.
Back to the fact I am not sure that you can just set one decibel level and that every mix of music that you get is going to carry the same distance so long as it is only at that decibel level.
Well,
do we know from the record whether that's the case?
No, but the Park Services,
well, that's pretty important because if how far it carries depends not just upon the decibel level, but also upon what instruments are being played and what the mix of those instruments is, then all of your solutions regarding decibel level at the source are simply not solutions at all.
Justice Scalia, I don't think it's hard to post someone at the Sheep Meadow who has ears and can hear if it's bleeding in. In fact, you will find in the record here, in the preliminary record, there was a man named Mr. Schulman, who was their expert during the preliminary injunction hearings, who said he stood at Central Park West, and here's his testimony. He said he had a man standing there. He could hardly hear it. That's on page 449 of the Joint Appendix, Volume 2 of the Joint Appendix. They can monitor that easily enough. That's just as much as a policeman standing outside your dorm who hears it bleed into other parts of the college. I assume this was a college, but I won't press you on it.
You made it up, Mr. Kunstler.
But the point is, it's easy to have someone stand at the Sheep Meadow. That's been designated, since this all began, as a quiet zone by Mayor Koch, to have someone stand there. If it's getting into the Sheep Meadow, then you don't have to care about decibels. It's going too far. But you can negotiate. They can negotiate decibel limits, and I agree, different instruments are different.
Not only different instruments, but different...
You don't find flutes in a rock band.
No, it's not just different instruments, different weather conditions. If the wind is blowing in one direction, you won't hear it at the Sheep Meadow.
On a particular day. So just negotiating a decibel limit is not by itself enough. Because you can get, I think Justice Stevens correctly says, the wind has a big factor. The humidity has a factor. Everything plays a factor, as Alan Thompson testified. But then you have someone stand at the Sheep Meadow, at the outskirts, or on Central Park West or Fifth Avenue. If it gets over there, it's beyond, it doesn't matter what the decibel limit is, it's beyond what it should be. Then they go and report to the band.
You certainly have a different decibel level for the Philharmonic and those rock bands, wouldn't you?
I'm not so sure. I've heard the Philharmonic.
As loud as a rock band?
Well, when those kettle drums go, it's loud. I heard it at Abyssinian Baptist Church when the Philharmonic came, and it is loud. Now, it's not as loud ordinarily as a close, confined club.
Sorry,
we have a rock band. What's your next question?
That was the 1812, Mr. Kunstler, you were talking.
But I guess that would be it. I've heard the Philharmonic, but the Philharmonic works in a much bigger auditorium where sound is dissipated, like Carnegie Hall. A rock band usually plays in the bitter end or in a small room where you have close confinement, and they do love it loud, no question about it. My daughter, well, I won't go into that. In any event, I think what they've done here, I don't think this is just time, place, and manner. I think this is a pure First Amendment freedom of expression case. They want to put George Solti in for Zubin Mehta, essentially, even though this is a different type band, and say everybody loves George Solti. He's a city employee. We all love him. Many have heard him, and therefore he's the man that's going to do it. And Zubin Mehta, you stay out of the park. Because that's really what they're saying. The sound mix man, despite what Justice Kennedy tells me, not in the record, the sound mix man in the record is classified as part of the band, as the aesthetic creator. And in fact, you'll find in their own brief, they talk about the city in the petitioner's brief, talks about the fact that there is an aesthetic balance that the mixer does. In the Solicitor General's brief, there's one very interesting statement, which occurs on page 15. The Solicitor General says, here it could be said that the city's sound amplification guideline prohibits outright those aspects of artistic expression which are inherent in the selection and direct control of the band shell sound system. There's the Solicitor General's brief that they say are in, prohibit outright those aspects of artistic expression. And that's what we have here. It's a sui generis case where the state is trying to essentially mix the sound of the band, a state employee using state-hired equipment. And the fact that that man may satisfy others, that New York sound may satisfy others, others like it, does not mount to a hill of beans here. It's not what satisfies others. It's what satisfies the RAR and the bands which it employs. In fact, in page 16 of the petitioner's brief, they recognize, quote, the aesthetic balancing of New York sound, and that New York sound showed, quote, remarkable sensitivity to that problem. Well, that problem is what you have in this case, the problem of whether the state is going to mix the sound under the First Amendment of rock bands, and that satisfies the First Amendment. I don't think it does, and I don't think any of your cases really have met this problem as to superimposing a state official to manipulate and to run aesthetic balancing of rock bands.
But the finding is that the state would do whatever your client told them to do about the mix.
You can't do that, Justice White, because
the finding was just wrong then.
Oh, remember the court's first finding was just the opposite. When it issued the preliminary injunction,
mm-hmm.
It changed during the hearing.
Well, after consideration.
Well, but I think when it heard the words until their ears bleed, I think that marked the change in Judge Haight's attitude toward this case. But if you read in the testimony...
But he never... I thought that we judged this case on the basis that the state employee will follow the directions about mix given to him by the performer.
But you can't do it. And you see it in the record. You can't do it because there are over 200 operations in a single minute sometime as to those knobs. You know, there are 8 times 22 knobs. And to get a message across to the technician that, no, that's not the way they want it.
The judge just didn't know what he was talking about.
Well, I don't think you're under the purely erroneous rule here of national gypsum. I know that's cited by the adversary here. I think you've got a pure First Amendment situation here. The judge, in his findings... did not dispute the fact it was an aesthetic mix and that someone sitting next to the sound technician cannot do the trick. Alan Thompson testified that you cannot do the trick. You have to do it yourself. And they allow 5 minutes a band here. If you notice, they have 45 minutes for, I think, 8 or 9 bands, and you just can't even get the drift in 5 minutes of these rock bands, which are very sensitive. This is all electronic music. And the mix is crucial to it. It's more crucial to it than with the Philharmonic, which doesn't use, thank God, electronic equipment, but uses the, I think someone said, the old-fashioned instruments. I think I've spoke my piece, and I can't think of anything more to say. Unless there are questions from the court, I will sit me down.
Very well, Mr. Kunster. Mr. Kerner, you have 6 minutes remaining.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. One of the problems with this case is that the respondent has just carried his burden of going forward, which he didn't do at the trial court. A lot of statements he made are not reflected in the record. First, with respect to a decibel level, he indicated we never tried to negotiate a level. That is inaccurate. At page 343 and 384, it says quite clearly that in 1984 we suggested a decibel level, which was precipitated by their inquiry as to whether or not we should have one. And when we agreed to try it as a test, They didn't show up to try to revise it and then took the position that any decibel level would violate their constitutional rights. So we tried that alternative, and it was because of their stubbornness, not ours, that it wasn't given a fair test. Second, with respect to the mix itself, Gary Floyd, our sound consultant, did not say that the mix is part of the band. At 180 to 181, what he specifically said was, a good mixer can reflect the band's artistic inclinations within 5 minutes. Second, Alan Thompson, the plaintiff's own witness, and I'd like to just read this, it'll only take a second, but it summarizes our case because he did not disagree. In asking to describe how he mixes at the board, he said specifically...
Where are you reading from?
At the bottom of page 100 to the top of 101 of the joint appendix. Yes, I am at the board, and basically during the performance, I'm part of the band because I'm balancing all their instruments together to sound right to their taste. How do you know what their taste is? They have their manager and their own sound mixer present at my elbow. Or they tell me what they want previously, and he goes on. That's precisely what we do. And that is why the district court confirmed that we could reflect the mix. With respect to the sound itself, as to why we didn't set a decibel level, that was one of the options considered by our consultant. But the reason he didn't set a general decibel level is because it varies based on foliage, temperature, and crowds. And therefore, a decibel level for each event would not be appropriate, and it may not even be appropriate for the very event you set one because the crowds keep forming. As the crowds get larger, the decibel level would have to be changed, and therefore there would be no objective standard they could count on. Finally, with respect to the separate volume control, which has now come up as a suggestion because it was mentioned by the Second Circuit, that was never mentioned up to the point of the decision of the Second Circuit. No one ever suggested a separate volume control. And in fact, such a control would cause more problems than it would solve, because a control such as that would have to be hooked into each mixer that was brought to the many concerts held at the Bandshell. As a consequence, those mixers would have to be compatible. To the extent that the mixers are not compatible, we would not be able to offer the event. Second, if you did have a separate volume control far and away from the mixer, basically what you could have is competing controls. Each time we lowered the sound, an individual at the mixing board would be able to manipulate his portion through the amplifiers and nullify the competing controls. Finally, in addition, by having a separate volume control, it would cause a signal loss in the mixer and could upset the balance of the mix. So frankly, that particular solution would actually affect the aesthetics, and it should be the least desirable. And that is why the city chose the method it did and why it was accepted by every person that used it in the year 1986. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kerner. The case is submitted.